This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. Go to freedom350.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number, 350.com, and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom350.com.
Doc Thompson and Skip Lacombe pinch hitting for Pat and Stu again today. Thanks so much for joining us. First up is the latest from the Sony web attack or internet attack on Sony from North Korea. And now it looks like it may not actually be from North Korea. Now, Skip and I talked about this on our radio program, and we said over and over, boy, this sounds pretty odd that they would know that it's North Korea right out and go that big. But hey, if the FBI is saying that, well, I guess it is. Stupidly believing in our government. You think we know after all of these years you can't automatically trust our government.
They got us.
Right.
Well, and then, too, North Korea came out and actually confirmed they were behind it. You know, I would have taken them at their word, too, but we made a huge mistake.
Right. Exactly. Now some of the private security firms have said, no, it looks like it wasn't North Korea. It looks more like it was somebody else doing it that could be on behalf of North Korea. Or, most likely, it was a disgruntled employee who is ultimately responsible for it. Now, do we know if it's the disgruntled employee that's doing it or has hired somebody to do it?
It's unknown. The two main thoughts at this point is that North Korea had hired somebody to do it, or that it is just a disgruntled employee who through some sort of a dispute. Because I had read earlier, too, there were some certain things in the malware in terms of the way the actual viruses or the way they got in it was programmed was hardwired with some of the actual passwords and stuff, too, that, yes, North Koreans could have possibly done that and programmed it in that way, but most likely, more than likely, it would have had to come from some sort of an inside attack because they had exactly what they would need when they would need it to actually attach to the system itself.
So if it's a former employee and they're actually doing it, assuming they didn't go out and hire somebody to do this, it was them physically doing this. So you're Sony and you didn't recognize that this could be a problem, that you've got this employee, here's Pete, he has this capability, and maybe, just maybe, you want to beef up security when you fire him you know he's probably disgruntled?
Had it been a disgruntled employee, you wouldn't have looked at some of the employees you've let go over the past couple of months. You know, we let Pete go, and he seemed to take it really rough. He said he was going to get us back and that, we would see our day. I don't know.
How about just that Pete had those abilities, that Pete had the ability to actually do this? I mean, don't you know in the office who is likely to have those? I mean, was he working as a janitor but actually had the ability to do that? Was he working as a writer, had the ability to do it? You were wasting him, right? I mean, you were wasting him. He should have been in your IT department. No wonder he's pissed off. You were taking care of the guy.
Or with all the leaked emails that was, you didn't take a look and see maybe, well, you know, we got emails from all 199 of the 200 employees except for this guy. I don't know. It's kind of like during, like, Halloween, you want to be sure to TP your own house as well, like to throw
suspicion off. Oh, right. I see what you're saying. Yeah. You know, I know one thing. If you're all the people who work at Sony, you're the receptionist, you're the writers, producers, all the office people, the janitors, and you find out it was Pete, because they know now. Now that they know it was a past employee, I mean, you know, guys, right? You know the employee that was likely to go rogue. The people, if they said, listen, one of the past employees has done something, they've attacked us, you're going to go down a very short list. You're going to say it was this guy, Pete, or somebody else. You're all going to know. And it's going to become clear pretty quick. Now, you work for Sony. You're one of those people. And you find out it was Pete. What's going to happen? What's going to happen to Pete?
Pete's going to have some hell to pay.
Yeah, he is. Pete's in trouble. There's some people going to his house right now. Or they should be.
I would. I'm going to Pete's house.
Oh, yeah, because he didn't just mess with Sony. And this is the problem. It's one thing if you mess with the company and it affects whatever. But you have, they have also, whoever's responsible to this, they messed with each one of those employees because they released all of their personal information, including their social security numbers. Now, it's one thing if somebody releases your credit card info. You may end up, you know, getting some charges that aren't yours, get it maxed out. But you're likely not going to have to pay that. But if they steal your social security number and they publish that, man, that's the key to your identity.
Well, and that's one of the things that I find odd about this and the narrative that it was just a disgruntled employee. It's one thing to go after your former company, being upset, wanting to cause them some sort of damage. It's another thing to release the personal information of fellow coworkers who, I mean, likely had nothing to ever do with this guy, no interaction with him. That's the one thing that leads to the narrative that I think outside attackers or North Korea hiring somebody to do it.
How'd you like to be the person that always defended Pete? Pete the hacker, the former employee. How'd you like to be that person, right?
That manager that just saw something in him?
Right. You know, guys, I think Pete's okay. You guys fired him, you gave it to him, but I think, okay, fine, you want to get rid of him. And then he attacks.
Like, ah. No, it's the same type of thing, too. He's watching the news and don't be Pete. Please don't be Pete.
Please don't be Pete.
God, Pete.
Da, why? No.
Horrible.
All right, so there's a guy that was trying to benefit from all of the limited release in theaters, or what was supposed to be limited release of The Interview.
Yeah, what was originally going to be in 3,300 theaters ended up only being released in about 10% of that, a little over 300.
And so many people were thinking that this was going to be sold out and it was going to keep rolling out, which it looks like it's still doing pretty well.
And initially it was. Initially, when all this happened, most of the theaters that had screenings did indeed get close to sellouts of them. There were many theaters that had sold out.
But an entrepreneur in Cleveland said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go and buy up a bunch of those tickets. And then I'm going to resell them for a higher price, making a profit. So he goes out and buys 50 tickets. I mean, right? He's a scalper, right? Scalping the tickets, gets them all. And then they can't resell them.
See, because this was before it was announced that The Interview would also be available digitally online via rentals and sales. So that did drop demand of the tickets just a little bit. So,
do you know what he was trying to sell them for initially?
I don't.
Because
I mean,
tickets are roughly $10 each now.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a profit he was trying to make. I got to think the amount of profit he was trying to make went down as the day went down. At some point, he was probably just trying to recoup his losses.
Well, he bought 50 tickets, and so roughly $10 each is $500. So if he said, I'm going to sell them for $11 each, you're going to make $50 off the transaction? Is that worth all of this? Probably not. He was probably thinking that he was going to sell them for
$20, $35
each and double, triple his money. That didn't happen. So instead of saying, "Dah, I'm an idiot. It didn't work out. I lost the money, whatever." He is now doing what all Americans would do, and that is sue or try to sue. And who's he trying to sue, Skip?
I believe the theater. He's trying to sue the theater to get recoup his losses.
Did the theater force him to buy the tickets?
No.
Did they perform some sort of trickery? Is there some reason that they...
I don't believe so. No, I believe he just went. He purchased $50, was unable to sell said $50 tickets, and wanted his money back.
Okay, so he's just an idiot.
There it is.
Okay, I'm just thinking I'm missing something here. I'm like, he really thinks he's going to be able to get his money back.
I guess so. He's filed suit against the theater, and they're going to it. In fact, theater even had said at one point, too, that they would be comfortable giving the money to a charity, but based off principle, no, we're not giving you the money back. You entered into
an agreement. You're not getting the money back.
The theater has a refund policy for customers where they would do a refund for a customer, but the theater is saying that he was no longer a customer at the point at which he purchased 50 tickets to resell. At that point, he was conducting illegal business with the tickets. So, no, we're not giving you the money back.
So they were willing to donate it to charity, though?
Yeah, they were willing to donate the money to charity. But the guy said no, that would be financially unwise.
What is that? It was financially wise to gamble with the
$500? No, that wasn't very financially wise either. But see, hey, two financially unwises don't make a financially wise.
Okay, that was financially unwise. All right, I would think the whole thing may be potentially financially unwise. In other words, I don't want to lose $500.
Pretty sure that's his quote.
What the theater should have said is, okay, listen, buddy, we know you're out the money, but here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a coupon for a free thing of popcorn, and for a nickel more, a big bucket of popcorn.
Well, and based off prices, that's worth about the $500 that he would have.
Yeah, right.
I've been to the movies recently, and that's about what it costs.
Wow, seriously? You screwed up, dude. Just man up. Take the loss.
That's one of those learning experiences. You know what? Maybe it's not such a good idea to scalp tickets.
I do feel bad for this guy in one.
Oh,
one piece of, you want to know why I feel bad for him?
Why?
It's not the loss of the $500. It's not the publicity, the negative publicity, all this. It's the nagging from his wife. Because what is she saying here? I told you not to buy those tickets. Why did you do this? Whatever. Right? The whole hullabaloo about it. I mean, he could have been scalping something that ended up being really valuable. Maybe he has some other good ideas. Now you will never know because the wife the whole time is going, I told you not to spend that money. I told you it was not going to work. The whole time. So now, is that worth the punishment? I mean, learning experience, $500. Okay, fine. That's a lesson learned. But the nagging of the wife, that's...
We'll just see what happens when the interview 2 comes out next summer.
This guy's so stupid. That's where I make it back.
They hacked him again. We're going to do it. I can double the prices this time.
This time I went too low. I thought too small. That was my problem.
And here's the deal. I'm doing 2 theaters. That's the key. Got to spread them out. Diversification, they call it.
And 1,000 tickets. I'm going big this time.
I like
big,
the way
big,
you
big.
Think.
Yeah, if he's a government employee, he's going, you know, I just didn't think big enough. I should have bought 200
right.
tickets. That's
exactly.
What it was. Wow, dude, come on. Man up. You screwed up. You saw the interview. It was pretty good.
I did actually see the interview. I thought it was quite good. It was what you'd expect from a Seth Rogen movie, immature, jokey, but overall a very good movie. Nuanced about North Korea, did show some things that, yeah, they are not very good. They were true to the fact that many North Koreans revere their leaders as godlike, and it really did a job of trying to break down that narrative and show people, yeah, this is not the way things are.
If you're unfamiliar with North Korea and what it's really like, Skip and I just recently interviewed a guy with a book called Dear Reader. Like, Dear Leader, unauthorized autobiography of Kim Jong-il.
As dictated to Michael Malice.
As dictated to Michael Malice. And it's a fun book. It's funny, whatever. But he also uses humor to make some really serious points. It tells you about how awful it is in North Korea. And it is just that. We interviewed him again recently, and he said, Doc, it is the worst place on earth. It is the worst place on earth, and people don't realize it. It's fun to make fun of them, sure, but there are people in the worst situations imaginable. To the point, if you're outside of the country for any reason and even get caught talking to a Christian, talking to one, not about religion, if they just come up and go, hey, buddy, you got the time? And you're like, yeah, sure. You will be beaten to death when you come back.
Yeah.
Executed.
You will be executed, summarily executed when you come across the border.
The guards regularly rape women in their prisons, and then when the women get pregnant, as people have been known to do,
it happens.
They beat them until they abort the child. Recently, there was a story, I'm not kidding, of a baby being born in a prison, and the guards took it from the mom and cooked it and fed it to their dogs. And this is standard procedure in North Korea. The people suffer from starvation and any number of diseases, as anybody would, and it's acerbated by the fact that they're starving, they don't have proper nutrition, and instead of giving them medication, they give them meth to make them feel better temporarily, which, of course, doesn't heal them and actually makes them worse. This is life in North Korea.
They also have what's called the 3-generation rule, where if anybody is guilty of a crime, they will take blood for 3 generations, meaning people who defect to South Korea, anybody who's still left up in North Korea, they'll kill 3 generations of uncles, cousins, family members, just because of the association.
So anytime anybody brings up, well, look at the human rights violations in ... fill in the blank. Anytime we go into any country and say, let's commit our time, our efforts, and possible blood of soldiers to you know, help things out, to take care of those people because of human rights violations, remember, North Korea. How come we haven't gone into North Korea? Now, I'm not advocating we do. I'm just saying, look at the disparity. And we say, we got to go into Iraq. We got to go into Iran. We got to do all this stuff. Look at North Korea. What about them? How come we haven't worried about their human rights violations? Well, the truth is, because we don't want to mess with China. There it is. How come? Why not? Are you really going into it for human rights? No. Why did we want to go to Syria? Well, he was gassing all of his, it was 100,000 people. Chemical weapons, 100,000 people. What about North Korea? Millions have died of their own people. That just shows you the hypocrisy of, well, it's human rights. We've got to go in and help people. My wife's family is from South Korea, and her grandmother's property is very close to the DMZ. So I was visiting a couple of years ago, traveling with them to this property, and most of the roads are built between mountains. It's a very mountainous country. So you don't get like gridded off big areas of you know, these smaller towns. It's pretty much one road and property or houses are right off of that road. It doesn't shoot off in all these little side roads. So we just keep snaking our way from Incheon Airport through Seoul and then all the way through the mountains, and we get up very close to the DMZ. And as we're driving through some of these areas, I notice these big, huge cement structures. They're probably 10 to 20 feet long along the road this way, and maybe, I don't know, 6, 8 feet wide, something like that, 10 feet high. And on top of them, huge cement blocks that make up pretty much the size, as they stack next to each other, of this structure they're on. And they have kind of these little metal legs they're on top, and it was just the oddest looking structure. And we passed two or three of them, and I noticed one of them had a guard next to it, like an official South Korean army. So I finally asked my mother-in-law, I said, what are those things? And she explained to me that it protects South Korea from North Korea, that if they ever go to invade, they simply pull the legs off of those top blocks, and they fall into the roadway, so they can't use their own roads to invade their country. And that's what they live with each and every day. And as you look down the riverbeds, as you go over some of the little bridges there, you could see these big structures in the riverbed. Now, sometimes they've made them real decorative where they kind of match the bridge. But the point is, it keeps them from driving tanks through the riverbed. Because it's mountainous country, the fastest way for them in on land would be through the riverbeds or along the roads they have. And this is what South Korea lives with every day. This is their life. If you look at the disparity between the countries, since World War II, all of the babies born after World War II in South Korea and North Korea, and you compare them, the South Koreans are on average 2 inches taller. And that's from the lack of nutrition in North Korea. Many of you have probably seen the lights at night, the satellite photos of the lights at night for the Korean Peninsula, how you can see the line of South Korea versus North Korea because there's just no lights on in North Korea. South Korea is completely built up. It's one of the world's biggest economies now from such a small country. It shows you what they've lived under. It shows you what they've put up with. And it shows you who's right in this ultimately. Who has the better life, Skip? Who has, you know, who has better nutrition?
North Korea or South Korea?
Yeah.
There's no question.
Right, exactly. This is what it is. So before you start attacking other countries and saying, oh, we got to go in for human rights violations, we'll go ahead and look at North Korea then. All right, I'm going to get a quick break in here. Don't forget to tweet at us during the show. It's at Doc Thompson Show, and it's at Skip Lacombe. If you want to use the hashtag What I Learned Today, we usually do that during our morning show. We'll read some of those coming up as well. Doc and Skip in for Pat and Stu. Tweeting at Doc Thompson Show and at Skip Lacombe.
At Pat and Stu, suits and ties, are you guys trying to step up the quality of the show? You guys have the gig. Shake my head.
All right.
That's
wow.
From Chris Childs, of course.
What a
who's guy. Slacking this week, supposed to be at work. We were going to say hi to him, but.
Yeah, it happens. We do have a video of the scalper.
Yeah, Jason Best is his name, actually, too, just outside of Cincinnati.
And, I thought it was Cleveland, or it's Cincinnati.
Yeah, and a little bit of video, too, from Jason Best, who was trying to scalp those tickets to the interview.
Saw all the hype about the interview on the 23rd and thought, hey, folks are selling these tickets in other cities. Seems like that's the thing to do right now, and why not give it a shot just to see how it goes? The credit card company said the charges are still pending. Once they posted the account that I should go ahead and dispute, and they felt that I was in the right in the situation. I would like to see going forward them clearly marking their refund policy, which tickets are non-refundable and why.
Wait a minute. The credit card company said dispute it?
Yeah, the credit card company is having his back in this.
I would lose my mind if I was the theater. How are you disputing this? What is the dispute? You dispute it if there is some question of who bought it or why. They're going to get his back on this?
Apparently, I don't, and that's of course just coming from his words too. We don't have any word from actually his credit card company.
Wow.
But according to him, yeah, the credit card company says wait until the charges actually officially post, come back, file a dispute. And according to him, he says he thinks he may have a case.
So does that mean I can go to a movie and say I didn't like it, so go ahead and cancel the charge that I put on the movie?
I bet you could.
Well, you know, I thought I was going to like it. I didn't know. I wish they would clearly have printed on there their policy about what the movie was a lot. The trailer was very misleading. They should be clearer about what it's, right? I mean, just make that stuff up.
I suppose you could. I got to find out who his credit card company is because I need to open up an account there.
Yeah, and then go charge a bunch of stuff and then dispute it. I'm going to go to some big dinners and say, I really didn't know. I mean, I thought it was going to be better than that. They really need to lay out their return policy. If is it half eaten, a quarter eaten?
I wanted medium rare. It was really more medium.
It's right there. I wish they should have told me. I wish they would have. I wouldn't have. Please. Man, and then playing the victim that, oh, they should have known, should clearly print their return policy.
Isn't it your responsibility as the person who's purchasing 50 tickets to say, you know, if I can't get rid of these, I wonder what their return policy is?
Again, this was not him purchasing two tickets for him and a buddy or him and his wife to go and then say, oh, I didn't know what the return policy was. I ended up getting sick. I went in the hospital. Whatever it was. It wasn't that. He was trying to make money off of them and now is blaming them because he didn't read the return policy. If I was planning on to scalp tickets in a situation like that, trust me, I'd be looking at all that stuff because I'm going to be weighing pros and cons. What if these things don't sell? Can I return them? Actually, I wouldn't even look at it because I would just assume I couldn't return them.
Oftentimes, yeah. I mean, when you make a purchase like that to a live event, to specifically a special event screening of this, I mean, this was on Christmas Day. This was already a well-hyped up movie. I would assume you can't return them.
Wait a minute. There is a refund and return policy on movie tickets?
Probably.
After the fact? See, that's the key here. He's talking after. Did he try beforehand?
That I don't know. That I'm not sure. I would imagine he probably, as the screening was about to start, saying, hey, listen, I'd like to return 50 of these. And at that point was told he couldn't.
Wow. Okay. See, that's just that.
Insane.
Wow. Okay. Well, good for him for trying, but, dude, it's on you now. All right, update on Air Asia. The plane that went missing a couple days ago has now been found, or at least parts of it, floating in the water, so it's not like an MH370 thing.
No, MH370 at this point, we're still not sure where that is.
Many bodies, I guess 40-some bodies have been recovered and some other debris. It obviously is pretty devastating for the families there. The bodies were not wearing life jackets, so likely they didn't know that they were going to end up in the water or didn't have time to put them on, right? I mean, if you knew, maybe they'd start using the flotation or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely, which, I mean, does perhaps lead some credibility to the idea that there was possibly a stall as they were trying to gain altitude too and going too slow. They could have very easily started nosediving. At that point, they would probably not have had the ability to get them on too, just spiraling out of control.
Then this morning there was another plane that...
Another Malaysian airline flight that did overshoot the runway, actually, at landing. Now, everybody got off that plane okay, no injuries. They deployed the emergency chutes, and people got off. But, yeah, I mean, really.
But that was Malaysia airline.
No, I'm sorry.
The one this morning, was that AirAsia or Malaysia?
No, I believe it was another AirAsia. I'm sorry, my mistake. An additional AirAsia flight that did overshoot the runway. And, yeah, they had to get off the plane, off the emergency slides as well. So bad week for them.
Yeah, so you have Malaysia Air with the two planes that go down. You have AirAsia with this stuff. This is horrible for the people that work it because, okay, you're dealing with the AirAsia thing. You're on a flight. Mm-hmm. It overshoots the runway. Everybody's fine. Things like this happen from time to time. How many people are still going to fly AirAsia?
That's a good question.
How many people are flying a Malaysian airline?
I mean, Malaysian Airlines at this point is I mean, they are begging for people to fly them. I mean, bargain basement, they can't get anybody on them. And again, missing flight, who knows? But at least with Ukraine, that didn't seem to really be in their control at all. Just a victim of the news, a victim of the times. It looks as though AirAsia may be facing a similar fate, particularly with the second incident.
You know, and this could still be anything. This could be weather. It could be a failure with the plane. It could have no negligence on, or could be a result of no negligence from AirAsia. And yet everyone's going to think it is. So imagine being the CEO of AirAsia or the employees or pilots or other people who work for the company, knowing something like this happens. You feel horrible for it. And yet you're still taking the heat for it, even though you may not be negligent in this all whatsoever. The CEO of AirAsia said his heart is filled with sadness about this. And ended up going to the airport to meet a bunch of the relatives, so I commend him for doing that. There's nothing you can do. What if it was not their fault?
At least in this case, too, AirAsia has handled the follow of it a lot better. They were notifying families right away. With MH370, they didn't let the families know that the plane was missing until it was supposed to be landing in Beijing. People were at the airport ready to pick up their family and, oh, wait, the plane's been missing for 2 hours? Mm-hmm. So at least in this incident, it appears that they let family know right away when they lost contact with the plane. So they've been handling the fallout a little bit better than at least Malaysian Airlines did.
Yeah, well, and then you had the whole, the government wasn't releasing stuff, didn't want Malaysia Air to release stuff. The dispute back and forth about who released it. Then there were all these questions about what was released. Then some of the stuff wasn't accurate. Uh-huh. And then, of course, all the speculation of, well, it turned, it didn't turn, it raised altitude, it lost altitude, where are the boxes, all of that stuff. They didn't help themselves at all with Malaysia Airlines. So, I mean, we talked on this a little bit about Chipotle yesterday because of some of the criticisms they've had about the police officers going into a Chipotle restaurant in New York and supposedly... according to the early reports, a bunch of employees put their hands up, said, "I can't," or "hands up, don't shoot." Then the police officers were refused service. Now it looks like it was one employee, and the police officers decided not to. But regardless of all that, when we talked about how Chipotle handled it, what did they do? They did slow rollout, a couple of brush off. Oh, it was one employee, and the thing just keeps building and building. In today's world, companies are very concerned about their image, and they keep trying to, you know, control the narrative. They don't want things to go viral, control the media. Many times that is the wrong thing to do. Simply admit what's going on, and you're going to be much better. It's always the cover-up that's in trouble. Now, many times maybe that works. Many times you could just, you know, market things away if there's an issue. But a lot of times it doesn't. And then it looks like you're hiding something and it ends up getting much worse. Just admit it. Come out and say, this is what we know. I think that's going to be one of the keys to the future with marketing. You're going to see more and more people be authentic and real and just admit stuff.
Well, I think you're going to see that in all facets of life, in marketing, in just our general lives. I mean, there's been so much of focus recently over the past 20 years with the internet getting big and the social media and so much sharing. People have been putting up a facade, a fake kind of idea of who they are or projecting. It's going to have to get back to authenticity, especially in marketing. For somebody who's trying to ask you for your business, ask you for money in exchange for a service or a product, I want to know who you are. And I think that's important. I think more and more people are beginning to feel that way as well.
All the way back to Chick-fil-A.
Absolutely.
Right? And people, listen, if you want to be apolitical as a business, that's fine as well. If you're apolitical, just let me know. That's cool. If you want to be political, that's fine. Just let me know and I'll choose. But they're so concerned. See, a lot of these owners want to control things. They want to control it so they can make as much money. They don't want you to know that they're one way or the other when it comes to politics or whatever. So they get as much money as possible. But then they still want to do that stuff with their money. They still want to be activists on one side. Say who you are. Be transparent. Tell me. I'm okay with that. Isn't that what you'd want? Tell us what you're learning along the way with the hashtag What I Learned Today and tweet at Doc Thompson Show and at Skip Lacombe. We're in for Pat and Stu today. Doc and Skip in for Pat and Stu today. Tomorrow morning in the Blaze Radio Network, we are going to feature our content awards since it's New Year's Eve. We'll be giving out awards for the best content, people or places or things who've provided us the most content over the last 12 months. In the front running for states that have provided us the most content.
Florida.
Florida. Skip, is currently your money on Florida?
Yeah,
for
my
that?
Money is on Florida at this point.
A lot of content out of Florida. Virginia provided us quite a bit. Mm-hmm. New York, huge amounts with Eric Garner and that. So content awards.
California as well.
Mm-hmm. Cities. A lot of cities have. New York City has. Ferguson. Mm-hmm. They may end up winning. They may end up taking away with it, taking it away, running away with it.
Toronto.
Toronto was big with Rob Ford. So yeah. A lot of cities there. And we'll also be handing out award for our most valuable tweeter. the person who has tweeted the most as well as the best tweets all year round. And we welcome your votes because we have our finalists and you can vote for them. If you go to Skip's Twitter page, it's at Skip Lacombe. I'm pretty sure they can follow the link to it.
Yeah, I put a pinned tweet up at the top, so it'll look like the last tweet I sent out was the one that contains the most valuable tweeter tweet as well.
You can also use the hashtag most valuable tweeter. I think a lot of people are using that back and forth trying to solicit votes or whatever, and you can probably follow the links there as well. But yeah, most valuable tweeter tomorrow morning about 7:30 Eastern time on the Blaze Radio Network. All you have to do is go to theblaze.com/radio, and all the information is up there. So I mentioned Chipotle and some of the problems. So Chipotle has now, their CEO finally has released a statement on the whole thing.
Well, good. Finally, we can clear up some of the misconceptions, some of the misunderstandings,
right.
What happened.
His statement said nothing. It's pretty much everything that Joe, who had been tweeting from at Chipotle tweets, somebody keeps tweeting using it and then says, by Joe, little, you know, -- Joe. Said the same thing. We've pretty much taken care. Let me read you the official. We work very hard to ensure that every customer in our restaurants feels welcome and is treated with respect. Clearly, the actions of this crew member undermine that effort. Our investigation has shown that this appears to have been a spontaneous, unplanned action taken by an individual crew member and was not coordinated. It was not a coordinated effort by the staff of the restaurant. In no way was the behavior of this crew member consistent with our culture and our values as a company. We've taken appropriate actions with regard to the crew member involved, but we're not at liberty to discuss the specific actions taken.
I have a question then.
Yeah.
If we have the tweets coming out from Chipotle Joe, who that's I'm calling
right.
him at this point, Chipotle Joe, what was the purpose of that official statement from the CEO?
Because it's the CEO saying it now.
But there was nothing different said.
Well,
if you're going to do a press release from the chief executive officer of a company, have some substance to it.
Well, he didn't want people to think it was just a rogue employee, an individual action, Joe.
Joe.
Yeah, the Joe saying that it was...
I thought you meant the CEO might have been a rogue employee.
No. He didn't want people to think you know, he wasn't speaking on behalf of the company. This is officially from the CEO. Have said nothing else. Okay, you've taken it. Will not be tolerated. This is not consistent with our company or our culture.
Can we get like a janitor who will talk about it? Anybody who will talk about it, actually?
See, if you're saying it's not consistent with the culture of your company, great, fine, I'll take it your word. But that would mean that you would have to do something to that employee to show that it's not consistent. I mean, just going, don't do that again, isn't sticking with your company's mantra then. Because if there's no punishment to back it up, that means your culture is to say that's the wrong thing to do, but not actually prevent people from doing it. So I'm assuming they didn't fire the guy. Otherwise, wouldn't you have just said we didn't fire the guy?
Yeah, no, at this point, I would assume they also still employ
okay.
the guy, yeah.
So if you still employ the guy, how many times could he do something like this before he would be fired?
And that's a good question. And what other types of incidences would somebody at Chipotle do or possibly be fired for or not be fired for? If somebody gets caught spitting into a burrito, do they fire him or do they let them know, hey, we don't do that here at Chipotle?
That's not the culture that we have here.
Now, if we catch you two more times spitting in the burritos, you're out of here.
Right. So what is it? He still didn't say anything. This, again, is a colossal fail, like Malaysia Airlines. Come out and admit it. You're not at liberty to say, why are you not at liberty? Well, it's a personnel matter. You could say that you fired the employee that did something. You hear that all the time from companies.
And not to mention, you're the CEO. If anybody is at liberty to say or could bend a rule or adjust a rule to go ahead and give people what they want and deserve,
can I? Can I translate for you?
Yeah, what's that?
Okay, this is Chipotle to English.
Okay.
Chipotle CEO to English. We didn't fire him.
You didn't fire him, okay.
Yeah, but I don't want people to know we didn't fire him. Mm-hmm. So I'm not at liberty to say. When you say I'm not at liberty to say, that means we didn't fire him. And I don't want you to know.
You know what? I would have even had more respect for if he came out and said this is a personnel matter and it's none of your business. I'm even taking that
okay.
sort of thing. Not at liberty to say? That's BS cop-out. Say, no, this is a private... We're a private company. It's a personal HR matter. This employee is not. It's none of your business. Something like that. But no, this is, again, a PR political cop-out.
I would take that a little bit better because at least he's being bold. But... why wouldn't you say? If he came out and said, we're not firing him because of this, he's been a good employee, we have some issues, we'll take care of it, fine.
Because the problem is he is at liberty to say.
Right, he is at liberty, and they kept the guy. That's what it is. Which shows everything else they've said about it not being a culture, of, you know, this type of behavior, and they won't tolerate it and all this, and a friendly atmosphere and whatever, is BS. That's a lie. Bottom line is, Chipotle wants your money. They want you to keep buying burritos. They want the cops to come in, and they want you all to shut the hell up about it. But they're not willing to stand by this supposed environment they're creating. And if you are Mr. CEO of Chipotle, then come on here and answer the questions. This is even an issue. It's burritos, for Pete's sake. This is the type of stuff that drives me up the wall. It's burritos. Can you be honest? We get enough of this crap from the government. I'm so tired of this stuff. We're not at liberty to say it's whatever. You want to make money? Fine. Tell people that.
We got angry, Doc, out.
You are. It's just so stupid. It's burritos, for Pete's sake. Wow. It's burritos. It's all of this issue over a flour tortilla stuffed with goodness.
It's true. But he's not at liberty to say.
He's not at liberty to say.
He wants to. See, the CEO really wants to come out and clear the air, make sure everybody knows, but he just can't. He's not at liberty. His hands are tied, Doc.
If you were this guy's buddy, let's say he's a buddy of ours.
All right.
And we get together for him at lunch or over a drink or the holidays. What are we doing?
We're razzing him.
We are just crushing him.
Hey, Pete, can you get me a beer or are you
not
at liberty?
Liberty. Exactly. This would not stop. In fact, I'd pull him around and go, what are you doing? You're screwing this up, man. It's burritos. Say the guy screwed up and we fired him. And then go fire him.
Or say the guy screwed up and we didn't and we're not going
Tell
to.
Tell us why. It's burritos.
But just, again, like Jeez. We've said, show us who you are.
Okay, of course, all of this was in response to the hullabaloo out of Ferguson and out of New York with Eric Garner and all of this stuff. We told you about the I can't read shirts at the...
I can't breathe.
Excuse me, I can't read. Apparently I can't
wow.
read either. Wow, that took a different turn, didn't it?
Jeez.
The I can't breathe shirts at the school. I think I was thinking about it because it's a school, and, you know, most students at public schools now can't
read. And Doc can't read
yeah.
as well.
California, Fort Bragg High School. Bunch of the students got together and put on the basketball team, put I can't breathe T-shirts on. And I think both the boys' basketball team and the girls' basketball team did it. Now, the boys' basketball team, they were told, you can't wear those, so they took them off and went back to playing. And then the girls said, well, we're going to wear them. Oh, well. And they weren't allowed to play.
They had forfeited a game.
Right. They forfeited a game, and that was it. And that's what it should be. Yes, I am a passionate supporter of the Constitution, and especially the First Amendment, because it's what we do. But I'm sorry. In public schools, your job is not to go there and express yourself. Your job is to go there and learn. You want to keep the peace at a school, make the kids sit down, shut up, and learn. All of our tax dollars go to that. And if I'm going to be spending that stuff, I don't want you pontificating a bunch of stuff. Go there and learn. You don't need to be standing on a soapbox at the school. Well, you want to do that after hours or something, out on the street corner. You want to tell your friends. You want to tweet. Students have a limitless number of places that they can express themselves without being in school.
And this is part of an extracurricular, too. These kids are going there to learn basketball, to learn about the sport, and to learn how to work as a team together and to compete as a team. You have to realize, too, that to be part of a team and to be part of sometimes extracurriculars, you have to follow the rules. I mean, if all of a sudden Glenn said we can't wear jeans anymore when we're on Pat and Stu, does that mean we're going to protest and hold up
I'm going to get my attorney in.
My legs can't breathe and something like that? No, we're just not going to wear jeans anymore because that's what has been set for us. That's the standard that was set.
That's the rule.
Now, if your basketball coach or your school says, you know what, we want all the kids to wear a school warm-up pants to the warm-ups and warm up in those. Well, you need to do that. You can't just because you want to make a protest and because of the First Amendment say no to that. Either because you don't have to be forced to do that. Don't play the game then. Then you can wear your I can't breathe shirts all you want.
There, by the way, there are some self-imposed limits to your free speech. I mean, you can free speech all you want to your spouse. Are you going to remain married? Depends on what your free speech is. You start calling your spouse a blimp, 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 blimp. You may not be married long. You have the right to say it, but is it a good idea? How about your place of business? You start protesting, sure, free speechify all you want at your place of business. Are you going to remain employed there? Well, if you work at Chipotle, maybe. We're not at liberty to discuss that, but maybe. But other companies, no. They're going to fire you. So this is a teachable moment for kids. You're at school. You can go out and express yourself any other place you want. At school, you're there to learn. Sit down and shut up. You want to go to a different school, a private school where it's focused different? I got no problem with that. Public schools, put the kids in uniform, sit down and learn. Instead of wearing the shirts that say, I can't breathe, and protesting how you're being kept down, even though you're not in New York or Ferguson, this has nothing to do with you, maybe you pick up a book. Maybe you stop throwing the basketball through the hoop and learn to read. That's the reason we're getting our industrial butts kicked around the world. Because these kids can't read. They haven't learned. Why? Because they're too worried about, well, what's happening in New York to a guy they've never met before and believing that somehow they are being kept down based on their race. Sit down and read. Learn. Instead of, they're out there protesting. They don't even know what they're protesting about. Before you go out there and protest, maybe learn something. How many of these kids could pass a civics test? Seriously, basic American civics. How many of them could pass it?
I would venture to guess not many. That's why I said yesterday, the same type thing. I want to go to these kids and ask them, what is it that they're protesting? What is their list of demands? What do they want? To whom are they protesting? I mean, all right. They're doing, it's the same thing. It's the same idea of the hashtag activism. They're just going out there and they're saying, oh, I can't breathe. Oh, well, I can't breathe either because mm-hmm. I'm black or I'm a minority or whatever. To whom are you protesting? What are you protesting? What is your list of demands? They can't answer any of those questions because there are no answers to those. There is no a viable cause for the protest.
And the reason we bring this up, because now there's been a change in the story. The update is now the boys basketball team and others are allowed to wear the I can't breathe shirts. They're allowed to because one of the boys went out and got an attorney, and the attorney threatened to sue the school based on an infringement of his First Amendment rights. And the school went, okay, fine, you can wear them. So be it.
So this is a perfect example of American civics, then. All you got to do is complain and get a lawyer and get your way.
This reminds me of, this is the I know my rights. These kids know their rights. They don't know their rights. They don't know civics. Let me share a little story. One of my siblings, when they were a teenager, decided to shoplift. And they were caught as they were exiting the store with a little piece of jewelry. And they called my mom in. And my mom walked in and immediately started beating my sibling about the head and shoulders. And he said, please, please sit down. Tell you what happened. And they said, your child was caught taking this out of the store, blah, blah, blah. And my sibling, as my mom started to speak, said, don't say anything. We're getting an attorney. And my mom was like, what? And my sibling says, don't tell him anything. I know my rights. And that didn't.
That was probably at that point that not very good well. For your sibling.
Yeah,
I've met your parents.
Yeah, because she got hit right off and hard a whole lot by my mom, and then finally the store security goes, you know what? I think we're done here. Why don't you just go ahead and take
your mom
her
may
home.
Have saved a criminal charge for that. It's like, oh, she's gonna oh, get yeah. it way worse from mom.
Yep,
than any
and
other.
Let me tell you, the criminal charge would have been better because she. Yeah, it was painful at home for her, him, it, sibling. Don't want to say which one it was. All right, get a quick break in here. Doc and Skip in for Pat and Stu today. I just find it hilarious. I find it hilarious that you got people protesting, kids in high school protesting, which, fine, if you want to protest it could be a teachable moment, that's great. But you're protesting with no knowledge whatsoever. I mean, had you actually investigated, you would realize, and this very simple, investigate the number of people killed. Minorities killed by police officers, non-minorities killed by police officers, number of police officers killed, number of police officers killed by minorities. All these different statistics, the number of minorities that kill each other, whites that kill minorities. And you'd realize it's not an epidemic of people being killed by the police. It's also not an epidemic, and certainly not an epidemic, of minorities being killed by police. Done. So what are you protesting?
You know what it is? It's just people being killed by people a lot of times. Sometimes it's warranted, sometimes it's not. But it's always been going on. It's not getting worse. It's being made into a greater issue than it is by people who are making money on it.
Even if they believe that one life lost is too many, so they still want to protest. Okay, fine. Well, then you've proven you don't know anything about our legal system. oh, you know enough to get an attorney and go out and you're going to sue.
I know my rights.
Right, I know my rights, just like my sibling knew their rights, right?
Am I being detained?
If you knew anything about the legal system, you'd realize it worked. You may not like the outcome, but it worked.
Justice was served. Right. It may not be the justice you like.
Right. It may not be the outcome, which, you know, people say, well, is that justice or not? Did that person receive justice? You've got to stop looking at it like that and start looking at it as outcome versus system. In both Ferguson and with Michael Brown and Eric Garner, what happened? They convened a grand jury, and the grand jury said, we're not sending it to trial. That's it. Done. In fact, in Ferguson, they probably wouldn't even have sent it to a grand jury because the prosecutor was likely not going to do that. Not enough evidence. Or enough evidence that it looks like Darren Wilson was justified in the shooting. But he did it just to go over and above to say, let's make sure. Still wasn't enough for people. Justice was served because it's the system of justice. If you don't like it, fine, work to change the laws. But as it stands now, that's what happened. And if these pinhead kids that are more worried about protesting while they're throwing a ball through a hoop knew anything about civics, this wouldn't be an issue at all. That's what I find so frustrating about these. These kids are out there protesting and they don't know anything. This is like, you know, me standing up and being outraged the way that they wired the electrical in here. How dare you wire it that? Do you know anything about wiring electrical? No, I don't know anything. Not a thing. But I'm going to go ahead and protest it.
Because they've been told they're supposed to be upset about it. Because they go out and watch things like Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert and all this crap. They get ginned up thinking there's a reason for them to go out and protest when they have no idea why they're there.
They are empty vessels. It's all sound and fury, signifying nothing. I can't breathe. Look at all the real atrocities. Look at what's going on in North Korea. I don't see him wearing shirts. Let's, you know, help North Korea. It's one guy in New York that you're wearing this shirt because of. Meanwhile, millions have been killed in North Korea. Millions of people die around the world. You're not worried about them because you've been brainwashed. Doc and Skip in for Pat and Stu. Hi there, I'm Doc Thompson along with Skip Lacombe, pinch hitting for Pat and Stu again today. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with you tomorrow as well. We're heard each and every weekday morning on the Blaze Radio Network. You can get us on demand. All of the shows are posted there, so at your leisure, it's theblaze.com/doc. That's theblaze.com/doc. It's all up there. Something we didn't get a chance to talk about this morning that I had planned on, and we just ran out of time, was the president interrupting a wedding with a golf game. This is such an odd story, and this is one of those things that, once again, so many people get wrong. Automatically, as soon as the story comes out, and I'll share the story with you in a moment, you've got a bunch of Democrats, libs, and progressives that go, I didn't do anything wrong, he's fine, blah, blah, and they start spinning for the president, carrying his water. And then as soon as it comes out, you've got a bunch of Republicans or conservatives or libertarians out there that go, he's the worst thing ever, he's a dirtbag, how dare he? Instead of realizing the true intricacies of the story. So you have a couple that is set to get married on this golf course. And the president is scheduled to play at this golf course. Well, the Secret Service comes by and says, the president's going to play through tomorrow, so we're going to have to move you. You can't be here. Now, of course, if you're getting married, especially the women who have been planning on this their entire life, it's pretty upsetting to you.
It'd be devastating, I would imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah. Men, too. I mean, especially if this is, you know, you're finally there, it's the day before. And to give the president criticism for playing a golf game that ended up, you know, pushing their wedding off and making them move it is awful. That's horrible. But here's something you got to remember. This is not President Obama's decision. Likely President Obama didn't even know that they were getting married, and that the Secret Service had told him this. All he knows is he's going out to play golf.
And according to the White House, at the time of the decision to go, he did not know there was a wedding schedule. He did not know that his deciding to play the round was going to affect this. That is at least according to the White House, if you believe that.
Now, The president's wrong to vacation so much, play so much golf, and fly all over the world on our dime. It's wrong that he's playing golf displaced somebody. But let's be honest, truth lives here. Likely, the president does not know this stuff. Could he have known this? Okay, maybe. But it's unlikely. Usually, he just knows the what's on the agenda. He's going to go here. He's going to do this. They handle all of the security. They don't run to him and go, oh, yeah, there's somebody getting married down the street. We're going to go ahead and push them back a little bit. Is that okay? That doesn't happen. Those decisions are made. And they are a little hypersensitive based on everything that happened with the White House fence jumper. The Secret Service is going to be extra cautious on this stuff. Now, when President Obama heard that they ended up moving this couple, he ended up calling them and congratulating them on their wedding. That's kind of a nice thing. I think his, the bride was excited to hear this. She was pretty
excited.
happy about this.
He did call and offer his apologies and said congratulations. Mm-hmm. So a nice gesture, of course.
Right. Now, if that had been me and my wife, that would have made it worse. I mean, actually talking to the president would just be...
Wait, this is who?
Yeah, this would be like insult.
Hey, listen, dirtbag.
This would be insult to injury. Hasn't it been bad enough? Now, the golf course, and people said, okay, we actually moved them to a different hole, and it was a hole of the golf course where they could get married, and it was even prettier, it was nicer, whatever. Okay, that doesn't matter. That's irrelevant, moving them. Is it nice? Great. Was it an upgrade? I don't know. Maybe it was. But that is up to the bride and groom. If they go to them, if they go to them and said, listen, you can get married here, but you could really do us a solid if you move down there, the president's going to play. Would that be cool with you? This area is nicer.
Yeah, I believe it was described as the base commander's expansive lawn, too, that overlooks the golf course, too. So I think it was an adjacent property.
Oh, okay.
It was one of the commanders of the bases, his lawn. He has an expansive lawn, and that's where they ended up actually having the wedding.
Which, you know, that's great, but that has to be their choice. Maybe they were getting married there because this is where he proposed. Whatever it is, you don't know. So the fact that it's, and this is something everybody's missing, all the progressives, liberals, and the people carrying water for the president are like, it ended up being nicer. They gave him a better place to get married.
That doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter. It has to be their choice and their decision in this matter. So let's put it into perspective. The president is wrong to fly all over on our dime. They have a place for him to vacation. It's called Camp David. And if presidents from here on out are going to go other places on vacation at our expense, it's time Camp David goes away. It's time Camp David becomes the best golf course near D.C., right? This is the best golf course in upscale real estate because somebody can make money off of that. Let's sell that. Let's sell it to private developers, and they can put in a mall and a golf course and expensive homes, and we can get back some of our money from him flying all over the world. And it's true whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. Number two, you shouldn't be going on vacation that much. Why are you vacationing? You live in the White House, for Pete's sake. It's pretty nice there, I'm told. Now, do you need to get out of it, clear your head every so often? Again, go to Camp David. But President Obama is the one that during his, actually, I think this was his during his run for Senate, or while he was a senator, people were speculating whether or not he should run for president, whether he would. And he was being very critical of George W. Bush, as we all should be, and said that if he would ever run for president...
This is right as he was announcing.
It's announcing right there.
Yeah,
if he would ever run, that he wouldn't be taking a bunch of vacations. The president has to know what he's getting into, that this comes with the job. Funny how it changes once you have the job.
Yeah, he had made a submission saying that you need to put things like family and vacations to the side if you'd make that decision to be in the White House. Well, apparently he's changed his mind.
He and Bush as well take these regular vacations. Bush was back clearing brush every other weekend in Texas. And President Obama flies once a year for a couple weeks at a time around Christmas to Hawaii. And then he flies, of course, to Martha's Vineyard and takes these other ones and has taken these international trips with the family as well. Sorry, we shouldn't be paying for that. Not as long as we have now an $18 trillion debt. Sorry, we don't have money for it. The cupboard's bare. Cut that stuff out.
An interesting angle, I think, to this is kind of a testament to, A, how his staff is able to, and B, how they do interact with the president. Like you said, too, this could have been a pretty simple solution. And I bet, had somebody actually gone to the president and said, hey, listen, Barry, we got some people getting married on the 18th green. any way we can maybe just skip that whole, you know, go around? There's got to be some way we could do this. Somebody on his staff should have been able to go to him. And I bet the president, he seems like a generally decent person at
about
the core.
About something
of,
like that,
something
yes.
like that. He would have been, you know what, okay, cool. I'll play 17 holes. Or, you know what, I'll hit that one first. We'll go back, loop it around. That way we'll be done. Something could have been done. So I get the feeling that either the president is so much of a tyrant that nobody's able to even go up to him and recommend something like that as to get to it.
And I think the president's pretty arrogant about stuff, but something like this, I think he would be pretty.
I do too.
Pretty affable about to say, listen, we'll do something different some way. We'll start an hour later. We'll start an hour earlier, whatever it takes. Or, you know, let's try to do something else for the couple, whatever it is, if he had to.
Although, again, and to this couple, too, when they had booked their arrangement at this facility, too, there was a note saying that if the president happens to be there and wants to play golf, that they would be bumped. So they knew when they signed any paperwork, there was going to at least be the possibility that they would not be able to secure the facility on that day at that time.
Okay, that's the next problem right there, is the couple knew what they were getting into or should have known. So all the people that are outraged, the couple knew. As I said, it wasn't the president's decision. But then again, the president shouldn't be there anyway. And this is what frustrates me so much. You hear generally two opinions. The president's a dirtbag. How dare he do this? Or, you're all making something out of nothing because you're a racist. Well, there's a little more to this. The people should have known. The president didn't make the decision. But here's one other thing I think he should have done. A phone call's nice. But the president making $400,000 a year and being a millionaire on top of it, he couldn't have sent him a little something-something? I mean, obviously the lady is not offended by President Obama. She doesn't know him to be the dirtbag we know him to be. So a phone call was nice. Great. You can't send him a little personal note that they would have forever? Sign one of their wedding invitations as the president. Sorry I was playing, or thanks for letting me play through. You know, or something, a little fun note like that on a wedding invitation. So, you know, the president could have showed up at their wedding, for Pete's sake.
They actually invited him. He was invited to the wedding, and he had turned down their request weeks prior, saying that he wouldn't be able to attend.
Yeah, so, okay, see, that's the part that's just...
His office at least knew a week or so in advance, because he was invited to the wedding, and he did deny the invitation.
Right. So, I mean, at that point, they may have to for security purposes, but nobody knows he's coming then. It would have been really easy for him to roll up with some security, and trust me, there's security everywhere around there, and go up and say, I just want to shake your hands. Thanks so much. Congratulations. Here's a bottle of Dom. You know, here's a bottle of Cristal. Yeah, heck, here's a bottle, a box of wine for Pete's sake.
I upgraded your room at your hotel. You guys have a penthouse tonight.
Right, exactly. I upgraded the room. And like you said, signing something from the president, that's memorabilia. That's huge.
Especially
that's
if
awesome.
It's in something like your wedding book.
Exactly.
Or
that would
invitation.
Have been a real simple thing. I mean, the phone call's nice and it's a great story, but you're not going to necessarily have that to go forever.
Well, and then it would have taken to the president destroyed and moved our wedding to, you know what, there was this bad circumstance. But he came by, he took a picture, he signed this, we still got married at the adjacent
Easy.
Property.
That's a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of fails on this one all the way around. But it does frustrate me anytime people get displaced. And this happens in Hawaii, and this happens when he goes to Martha's Vineyard as well. They end up shutting down. In a lot of communities like that, there are a limited number of roads. So they shut them down. So locals are actually told you cannot leave your residence between this time and that time. What? This is America. The president is flying in, so I can't leave my personal property to go out on a public road? See, President Obama and the other progressives out there love to tell you how you didn't build that. It was everybody chipped in for those roads where you shipped your goods and services. Well, if they are public roads, then how come I can't use them when you want to? Who else gets to say that? When else, save an emergency or a disaster, do they shut it down? Nobody. That's emperor status. That's a king. I couldn't do that. If I was president, I absolutely, aside from spending the money, could not do that. I could not displace people saying, simply because I'm what? I'm president? I'm going to come into your community because I want a vacation there, or I just want to fly around and do some sort of campaign stop, and I'm going to displace and disrupt your entire life when you're just a guy who's making $35,000 a year trying to put food on the table for his kids, and I'm going to delay you getting home an extra hour, or delay you getting to work, or make you leave 3 hours early for this stuff?
Now, it's ridiculous. I've been stuck in the traffic before in Albuquerque. There's only a couple of roads you can go really north-south with across the whole way, and it's taken hours. It's taken hours for me to get home when the vice president has been in town. And they've shut down roads, and I-4, the main drag, the main interstate. So all the side streets are flooded. You can't get on the main, and it takes hours to get around.
What do all politicians tell you? especially those running for president, Democrat, Republican. I mean, without fail, if you ask them how they think about the economy and American people, they're always, I'm in it for the middle class. I'm in it for the middle class, out there fighting for the middle class. It used to be years ago, you had a bunch of the bleeding hearts of, I'm out there for the poor people out there or whatever. But they realize that doesn't sell well, because we know there's a lot of poor people that are poor because they don't work, and that gets real muddy. So it's most people, even if you're poor, identify yourself as middle class. No one wants to think they're lower class. So they're out there fighting for the middle class. It's a good marketing term. I'm out there for the average person, the small business, the little guy, right? That's what they say over and over and over again. Well, how is it you're out there for the little guy if you unnecessarily fly into an area and disrupt traffic for hours for that person I told you that's just trying to get to work or get home from work?
Well, you're on a vacation, by the way. It's not even official business, or I have to go to this meeting. He's going to golf. He's going to vacation for 2 weeks in Hawaii.
And we're talking millions of people, potentially, that you're displacing on an average trip. Mm-hmm. Certainly hundreds of thousands. You shut down a couple of highways into New York or Los Angeles or someplace. How many people are you affecting? I mean, traffic backs up in areas that are already congested. Skip and I, over the summer, were in D.C. for a project we were working on with the Blaze Radio Network. And we're sitting there. Were you with me when the cars came by for the president?
Motorcade.
You were with the motorcade.
I got video of
okay.
it, actually. Yeah,
that's right.
Incredible.
I'm sitting there with Skip having dinner, and all of a sudden, it gets really weird. Now, I've been in D.C. countless times, and I've never seen the presidential motorcade. I've even been at the White House broadcast, all kinds of stuff, in and out of Virginia, and have never seen the motorcade. Skip and I are just having dinner outside one evening, and it gets really weird. Like, the streets get empty. And we didn't even see any real, you know, law enforcement or anything. Every once in a while I see something, but it just was dead all of a sudden. Well, they were blocking for the motorcade ahead of time, like 15, 20 minutes ahead of time, all of the roads anywhere near there. So all of the traffic had passed out. They had shut roads down in areas where we couldn't see. And then all of a sudden we see the security cars start coming through every intersection, squaring it off. I mean, you're talking dozens and dozens of officers before the motorcade even comes through. And locals that have seen this before, you can hear them start talking, oh, I think the motorcade's coming, I think it's coming through or whatever. People start lining the street. And then all of a sudden you see it. A couple of motorcycle cops, zing, zing.
And they're zigzagging the road. They're basically doing a figure eight in the road with a couple motorcycle cops. There's several SUVs. What was so wild about it is there were SUVs with sensors on them that I had never seen before. I mean, you'll see like
underneath the cars,
I mean, radars on top, all kinds of little sensors coming up. There were hatchbacks that had the hatch open and AR-15s, officers with AR-15s. Then finally, you see one of the beasts come by. Then the second beast, because the motorcade always travels with two identical limousines, so you never know which one the president's in. Even beyond that, there was an additional 30 vehicles. There was an unmarked black ambulance. There was a regular City of Washington, D.C. ambulance.
Dozens of vehicles. Secret Service.
Washington Police Department, Capitol Police, any agency you can imagine. There was, I mean, no less than 200 vehicles that are involved in the motorcade.
And they ended up shutting the road down for all of this just so the president can travel through. For displacing people easily a half an hour in a congested area. Because this was, you know, getting to be evening where everyone's going out and about.
A mile from the Capitol, probably.
Yeah, and really, really busy. And I'm thinking to myself, what about all the people you've displaced? And these pinheads lined the route. They started lining the route as he was coming by. Woo, all right, way to go. Now, I don't care if you like the president or not. How do you cheer that dictatorial-like attitude, right? That dictator-like attitude. That monarch, I'm better than you. I'm going to come. What?
That's what I get when you see those propaganda films of like Kim Jong Il or whatever. People weeping in the streets on Kim Jong Il when he passed away.
No, I'm sorry. If you're really in it for the middle class, you're in it for the average working person out there. You're not displacing them so you can go to another fundraiser. Doc and Skip in for Pat and Stu today. It's manspreading. Manspreading is the new disease taking over New York. Manspreading.
Excuse me?
Manspreading.
What? What the hell is man spreading?
What is man spreading? You're a man spreader from way back. You've been spreading men all over the place.
Man spreading?
Maybe that's not the way
I'm not familiar with that. Yeah, I
man spreading.
Okay. Have to fact check that last one.
Let me help you out here. Supposedly this is man spreading. Normally it may sit like this, something like this. Sometimes people cross their legs. This is man spreading when you just spread it all out like this and get all comfy like.
So get it. You don't have to zoom there, guys.
Yeah,
whoa.
Like this.
Hey, Nat, it's still a family show.
This is
sitting comfortably. Is
that's
not?
Man spreading. It's a disease in New York.
Man spreading?
Man spreading.
Yeah, there's people man spreading all over the studio.
They're man spreaders. They've been spreading men forever, too. Can you use it that way? It doesn't work that way.
I don't think you should avoid using
that again.
In that.
All right, so there's some pinheads in New York, and by pinheads in New York, I mean people who run New York, who claim that guys being comfortable, specifically men, who sit like Skip and I just showed you.
Man-spreading.
Man-spreading.
Let's call it what it is.
Are a disease, and they're starting a courtesy campaign specifically on the subway.
By the way, what is a courtesy campaign?
It's a campaign telling you to be courteous. Dude, stop the spread, please.
It's a space issue.
Wait a minute here. You live in a city with 7+ million people.
Yes.
You move to a city that's metro is about 15 million people, where everything is like this, and suddenly you have an issue with space. Your apartments are the size of a shoebox, and they cost thousands of dollars a month. And you're concerned with space now on the subway.
Now, if somebody was man-spreading in your apartment...
Oh, yeah.
Like, against your will, if there's somebody who's man-spreading
there... Oh, if you're spreading men in an apartment?
Without the owners or the lessee's approval?
Yes, if you want to spread men in your apartment, that's your business.
To each their own,
you know, whatever you want to do, that's fine.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Now, is it a courtesy issue? Is it a space issue? Yeah, okay, fine. Is it wrong to spread out when everybody else can't sit down or, you know, where there's limited space? Absolutely. But I have a couple of issues with this. Number one, as I said... that it's a space issue, and you're worried about that on in New York and on the subway. Subways are like this half the time anyway. Number two, why is it man spreading? Why are you going specifically after men? It's only men who sit that way? I don't know if you've been to New York and been on the subway, but I assure you it is not limited to the male gender. Have you seen women sitting this way?
I have, yes. Are sitting in often kinds of situations, too, with legs out like this and taking up multiple space. We've seen before, time and time again, with their purses. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, their purses are occupying a whole other seat.
Is that female spreading?
Yeah, I guess so.
Woman spreading? Woman spreading?
Girl spreading?
Girl spreading?
Chick spreading?
Something like that. That's my biggest problem with it, though, that once again attacking men in this one. How is this a male versus female issue?
It's not. It's a courtesy issue. It's an awareness issue.
Now,
being aware of your surroundings and aware of the space you're occupying.
Even though we've said it's a courtesy and a space issue, and even though that's one of the ways New York is positioning this, you've got some women like Bridget Ellsworth. She is a 28-year-old music teacher who was speaking on this, man spreading. And she said it is sexual harassment. I want to make sure I get this right. She said it is sexual harassment, Skip. It's not a space issue.
How is it sexual harassment?
She said because some men engage in this activity even when the subway car is not packed. See? Sexual
even when harassment. It's not packed?
Yeah. She said, like, you know, so some guys will do this when it's packed and they're taking up the seats on the subway. They got, like, kind of little, they're like, sectioned off and they kind of goes up. Like a butt imprint. So it's not just one flat bench. So it clearly shows one seat, two seat, three seat. And sometimes a guy will sit in a seat like this or a woman, and they kind of ooze out when everybody else is packed in like this. And she says even when it's not packed, they still do that. That's sexual harassment. So there you go.
I don't understand the correlation.
Would you like to hear your quote here? I'll give you a quote.
I guess.
She said they could move over and spread out their legs all they want, but they squeeze next to me and do it.
Here's the thing. You know who else could move?
Who's that?
You! If you're offended.
What are you talking
if there's
about?
An empty car and you're offended by the guy sitting next to you, get up and move. At that point, if he starts following you and sits next to you, call a cop.
So you're saying she's sexually harassing him?
I think so.
She likes to be sexually harassed.
Here's the guy. I'm over sitting on a subway cart, minding my own business, man spreading away, and some girl comes sit next to me?
Mm-hmm.
That's sexually harassing me.
Or at least propositioning.
That's what I'm saying. Or maybe the guy is propositioning you. You know what you can say? No.
Well, there's that, too. That's that, too, yeah.
Get up and walk away. Why are people so concerned these days with somebody having to save them or rescue them from some campaign, some horrible boogeyman that's out on the subway man-spreading next to you?
Yep. I see what's going on.
What's that?
You're a man-spreader apologist.
You know what? Here's the thing. I am.
Wow.
I am.
You think you know somebody. I mean, I've worked with you for years.
You
and
have.
Then all of a sudden now you're...
I'm all about
You're
comfort.
You're advocating
I'm all about comfort, baby. I'm all about comfort.
Wow. Folks, I'm sorry. I didn't know we were going to go there. I didn't know that I would have a man spreader that is willing to admit
Wait, hold
that.
Hold on, hold on. Yeah. Now you're saying you're anti-man spreader?
I'm just
you're
saying,
with this. You're with this lady.
You're saying,
fighting the fight against man spreading. That's if you're not with me, you're with them.
No,
who are you
not
with?
True. That's not true.
You're not with me, you're with them.
Who are you, Bush?
So,
So
you're continuing the fight against manspreading.
I'm saying there's a third option. I don't engage in manspreading, nor do I care what other people do.
So you're a waffler. You're just noncommittal. You can't just make up your mind on something. You gotta ride the fence on that.
Wow, okay.
I thought I knew you better, Doug.
All right, I'm with you.
You and Bridget Ellsworth going to have coffee next time you're in town?
No, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. All right, very good. Yeah, clearly not an issue they need to be taken up. You know, you could take up on the subway in New York. I mean, if you're worried about comfort, people's comfort.
The smell?
Yeah. I was thinking more of a blanket statement, though.
Okay.
You could clean the subway.
There's one thing.
There's something like that would take care of both the smell and
the sticky
film that's on everything.
For anybody that has not ridden the subway in New York, everything is sticky. You touch the poles, it's sticky. The little handheld things here, sticky. The turnstiles and everything on the subway is sticky. I'm not like a germaphobe, but when I'm in New York, I always travel with a little hand sanitizer because it freaks me out. I get off that subway, I got to get the random sticky gunk that is on my hands off immediately.
Instead of man spreading, maybe sticky film spreading or smell spreading. You could get rid of those by simply cleaning the subway. And it's not just the cars. It's the subway system down into it, the tunnels, the walls, everything. Maybe clean those once in a while. Just once in a while. How about that?
I personally find the smell to be sexually harassing.
Sexually harassing or
yes.
just harassing?
No, sexually harassing.
How's it sexually harassing?
Oh, they just say these things.
Oh, okay. Is it also racist, too?
Probably.
Might be racist
and
as
sexist
well.
And heightist.
Yeah, I don't understand what they're doing there. Here's another little oddity about the New York subway. You go to the subway in the summertime, and it is sweltering hot in a lot of the. You go down
110 degrees.
It's boiling. I mean, just you're down there a second, and you're just sweating like crazy. Now you would think, okay, I get it. All of the heat. I mean, it's hotter down there than it is outside. Boiling down there. So you think, oh, I see. It's like the heat from the subway cars are blowing in, so it's going to be a little
all
hotter down there.
All these trains are moving,
right.
Contact friction with the tracks.
Well,
of
then
course.
In the wintertime, excellent. It'll be, you know, you're below ground. That means it'll be warmer down there. So at least half the year, it's better off. No, it's freezing down there in the wintertime.
I don't understand how it happens.
How are you below ground and it's hotter in the summer and cooler in the winter than it is upstairs? How is that? It's like you've got a plan for something like that. I think they're trying to keep people out of the subway. I think it's like a conspiracy for the taxi drivers and the handsome cab drivers. Right? The cars. Uber, right?
Just another way the MTA is screwing us.
Here he is. You'd think you'd get it right half of the time, for Pete's sake.
Apparently not.
So man-spreading, watch out for it. It's probably all around. I'm sure it's going to be an epidemic soon. I'm thinking about wearing the I can't...
Spread?
How would that be? My can't
I can't spread?
I can't spread. I'll work on it. If you've got suggestions for us, at Doc Thompson Show or at Skip Lacombe on Twitter, we'll interact with you even after we get off this program. It's at Doc Thompson Show and at Skip Lacombe. In for Pat and Stu today. I didn't need that. I didn't see. It's bad enough that the crew is man-spreading constantly around here. They're behind the cameras. They're sitting all around watching in the studio, the directors and everything. They're all man-spreading out. But then as soon as we said man-spreading, then they had to exaggerate it. And we're seeing even more of their man being spread.
At least they didn't catch Bill in his kilt.
Oh, God.
That right now is...
I don't even want to think about that. That's...
is bad. I guess when Glenn's gone, the kids will play.
I don't know. Maybe that's regular activity when Glenn and Pat and Stu are here, and maybe they are into that sort of thing. I don't know, and that's fine. What you do on your show, that's okay. I'm just saying.
I'm not going to judge you guys.
I just wasn't ready for it myself,
you know?
I wasn't prepared for something like
that.
You know, maybe man spreading has a little less to do with being sexist and a little less to do with being courteous, and it has more to do with people being fat. I don't know if you know this or not, but there's a lot of fat people, including me.
That was the other angle that I was going to bring up, because I have been on a subway. I haven't noticed times when people have been man-spreading and been offensive to me. But there have been some pretty fat people who have been oozing over into my seat before.
Could have something to do with me being 6'4". That could have something to do with that, too.
How is an airplane flight for you, usually?
I wish I could man-spread. There's no man-spreading going on. It's like this.
Well, you have like the man spread style with your knees.
And then my knees up into my
chin
or whatever. Yeah, that's not spreading. That's man pacting or something. That's all that is, because I am
compact. We call it sardining.
Sardining, something like that. That's my life each and every day. So man spreading is a little more to do with we're all overweight. I happen to be tall. Things were, I mean, a lot of these subway systems and everything. Look at old houses. They were built when people were much shorter, much smaller. We generally get bigger and bigger, taller and taller at least, and in the last 50 years, fatter and fatter as well.
And this Bridget Ellsworth idiot who goes out there and writes this, have there been one time when she's been on a subway and as she describes somebody man-spreading, has she ever once thought to go up to the guy and be like, hey, listen, can you maybe close your legs just a little bit? I'd get a little more space. I venture to guess there's not been one time when she's approached somebody with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how people would react to it. I bet in most situations you ask somebody something like that, they're probably going to be a jerk to you. I mean, unfortunately, you can't ask people things like that. You can't normal civil conversation in stores. Nobody wants to be wrong anymore. Nobody wants to say they're wrong or admit they're wrong, even when you're wrong. I mean, do you want to? I don't.
No.
I mean, it's difficult to go, all right, I screwed that one up. I mean, I try to. We're on our show. I'm like, okay, I got that one wrong and we did it. But it's not easy. And sometimes you like, you know it's wrong. I bet most times she went up to him anyways, they'd be jerks anyways.
I mean, I would like to have more hope in America than that, but yeah, you are probably right.
Speaking of being fat, apparently that big omnibus bill that they passed just a couple of weeks ago, and they just slammed it through, and the rest of us were saying, okay, you're heading towards a government shutdown, and you've got a new Congress starting. John Boehner, why are you going along with this nonsense? Why did so many members of the House and the Senate go along with this? There were a lot of Republicans that are saying, yeah, let's go and push this thing through. $1.1 trillion of spending. And they attached all kinds of other stuff to it. It's the sausage-making process. Don't worry, Doc. Don't worry about immigration. I know we didn't put anything in there to stop the president's immigration plans. Don't worry. I know we didn't stop anything or put anything in that's going to stop Obamacare or any of that stuff. Don't worry. We'll do it after the first of the year. Why wouldn't you do it then? I know the politics you're playing there. Well, there's another little piece to this $1.1 trillion omnibus spending bill, and that is some possible changes to Obama's food policies. Now, you know, in 2010, they passed the Healthy, Hungry, Free Kids Act. This was the big thing that Michelle Obama did, and it changed all the lunch programs in the schools. It laid out this whole new lunch program where kids have to eat fruits and vegetables. And, swell, that's great, wonderful that kids are going to eat that way. I don't think the school should be forcing kids to do it. Hell, I don't even think the school should provide lunches. And I don't mean like free lunches for kids. I don't know why they're cooking lunches at school anyways. Make every kid pack.
Well, and again,
how hard is that?
And again, to clarify, these are meals that are being provided to the kids, not necessarily being eaten by the kids.
Well, and that's the next thing about it. Yeah, the failure of this program has been horrible because they throw them away. In fact, we see the kids are actually eating less healthy because they're not eating at all now. They just throw it all away, and there are mounds and mounds of food in the garbage cans where the kids are not eating. Even Los Angeles school system, Los Angeles Unified, they even brought in Jamie Oliver at one point, and he was designing the menu so the kids would still like it. You know, a little sushi, really, that's what the kids are going to eat? They're eating sushi and chicken Kievans. No, they're not eating that stuff. Kids want really basic foods. Wrong or right, that's what they want. That's what they like.
Chicken
they like bland
nuggets,
stuff
French
quite
fries.
Often. Right. So the big plan was for the federal government to take more and more control of it. And that was the Healthy, Hungry, Free Kids Act. And, of course, it provided a bunch of money for schools and a bunch of free lunches and breakfasts and then dinners for kids and weekend meals and all kinds of crap in there. And all it's done is make the kids less healthy. The kids are not eating the lunches now. We're wasting more food than ever, and we're wasting billions upon billions upon billions, hundreds of billions of dollars on this stuff now. Well, a couple of congressmen and senators slid a little piece into this this new omnibus spending bill that said that they will now have more flexibility. States and school districts will have more flexibility to exempt schools from the USDA's rules around this that fell under that Healthy Kids Act in 2010.
So basically saying that they, that districts would have the ability under some system to be able to opt out of the federal standards.
And there's the key to what you just said. See, at first glance, you go, oh, good, they put something in there. Well, first of all, that stuff doesn't belong in an omnibus bill. Make the bill about spending, make other bills about other stuff. But even so, you're probably like, good, we're taking back some control. No, no, because what did they pass? That under certain circumstances, states would have some flexibility to opt out of some of this stuff. How is that a victory? That's not a victory. A victory is passing legislation that says we are not going by this act, by fully repealing that nonsense. That's a victory. The rest of this is just throwing little breadcrumbs at us. That's not a win. Because what's going to happen? They're going to stop there. Okay, we gave the states some flexibility in dealing with some of this law in certain circumstances. See, it's solved. We fixed the problem. Imagine if they claimed, hey, we fixed Obamacare because we've repealed parts of it in certain circumstances where it'll give you some flexibility if it's just right. What? Repeal the thing. Either you like the law or you don't. But specifically, Skip, this part that gives them some flexibility has to do with the grain. It has to do with the standards that were set forth by whole grain. What about the rest of it? Why just the whole grain? What has history showed you about D.C.? Congressmen act not often in the best interest of their constituents, but they're acting in the best interest of their
donors,
their donators, exactly.
People who got them to D.C.
And there it is. So if they're taking one part of this Healthy, Hungry, Free Kids Act and saying we're going to change this because something's not right with it, and it specifically has, it gives states more flexibility to deal with just the whole grain portion under certain circumstances, it's a payback. Somebody, somewhere along the way, it's going to give them more flexibility. So it doesn't have to be whole grain. We can use Skip's half grain bread.
Someone's going to be making more money off of grain, though, and
right,
it's connected to these
exactly,
congressmen.
Somebody somehow is either going to be able to get their product on school lunches that it didn't fall in this category before, which means these congressmen and senators like Michelle's law now. As long as it opened it up just enough where their people, their boys, the people who donate to them, can now have their product in, because it still keeps everybody else out. If it opened it up where it was completely flexible, where every state and school district could decide what's right, then their client, the people who donate to them, I mean, let's face it, their clients, would have to go and say, okay, Skip, you got a school district here, here's what we can do for you, and they're going to negotiate. What it does is it completely eliminate the other competition and lets their people get in just under the wire.
Even more egregious to that, the point you made quickly early on, is that what the hell is this doing in the omnibus spending bill? Why are you adjusting, making slight adjustments to the food programs in an omnibus spending bill? That's not the purpose of this. And that is what I'm more tired of out of D.C. than anything. If you need to have some sort of overhaul in the food program, do it separately. Do a bill. It's the same thing we say about comprehensive immigration reform. That's not what we need. We need to do things piecemeal and small. I want to take a look at the bill, and I want to be able to read it. One page, two page. Not an $800 bill that is written in legalese and references previous laws and future laws and separate court hearings. That's not the way to get things done. It's intentional. Confusing.
These companies love having limitations put on what can be sold and bought and whatever by the government or what other people can do, because it does eliminate their competition. And that's what happened with the Obamacare bill. At first, all the insurance companies were like, this is horrible for us. How dare you, government, tell us? How dare you put these rules and regulations in place? And then do you remember when they did the big shift? About halfway through the negotiations, as the bill was getting ready to go on, remember Obama came out, had all the people in white jackets all the doctors that were supposedly for it. And then he had a bunch of the insurance people that are, yeah, absolutely. And he kept touting, the insurance industry is behind it. It's good for him. No, there was a handful of people or companies in the insurance industry that liked this because they knew they were going to be one of the few companies that would be under the umbrella with the new rules and regulations. So although they may not like the restrictions initially,
overall, they're going to be making more money.
They're going to be making it, or they know if they're going to have to deal with this anyways, at least they're one of the two, three, four, or whatever, that do get the business, and it completely eliminates their competition.
Well, and that's why you saw, I mean, universally, when Obamacare was originally decided, most of the insurance, all of the insurance companies was like, wait, we don't really know if this is going to be a good idea with all these regulations. Then as the few, the winners were chosen and the losers were chosen, you started to see those people come out and say, well, you know, we actually think we could probably make this work. I mean, they couldn't have been more transparent with it if you were looking.
So the senators that made the change, which is in the right direction, and people like us are like, right on, they're changing this. It was only to do somebody a favor because they put the restrictions just on or changed the restrictions on just the whole grain portion of it. How come you didn't do it with the rest? How come you didn't do it with the fruits, the vegetables, the dairy, and everything else? Because it didn't help them out by virtue of helping the people who donate to them.
Well, and this is just another feather in the hats of these guys, too, that they're going to run on and say, see, and we fought the Obama's progressive food lunch program. No, you didn't.
By the way, Michigan, the state of Michigan has announced that they are going to begin drug testing some welfare recipients, and I think that's a great idea. Listen, if you have money that you can go out and buy drugs and anything else like this, then you shouldn't be getting my money for food. Maybe start off buying yourself food. And then a startling statistic out of Michigan that has to do with how many people are on welfare and getting food stamps. I'm going to share that with you coming up. It's Doc and Skip pinch hitting for Pat and Stu today. Wild statistic out of Michigan. Imagine this is Michigan, or at least the lower peninsula. No, here's the upper peninsula. It wouldn't be the lower peninsula. It's the whole thing there. Anyway, startling statistic out of Michigan. As they begin their drug testing to combat people who are fraudulent when it comes to welfare, and it's not just fraudulent because I don't know if that's actually fraud if you're on. In the past, people, no, the welfare fraud is like I'm getting benefits and I don't deserve them or I'm cheating the system somehow. But really, unfortunately, people don't recognize that if you're on drugs and you're getting welfare, that's fraudulent to me. Because you're saying you don't have money for food, but you do have money for drugs and everything else, and that's the reason. So as they begin their welfare
unless they have, like, for the drug stamp program, that they get the drugs through the drug stamp and then the food through the food stamp.
Right, exactly. You don't want the two to mix or whatever. But as they start this on Friday, right after first of the year, a new statistic that there are more people on food stamps in Michigan, more people get food stamps than there are students. Total state population. Total pupil count for K through 12 is 1,564,000. Total number of welfare recipients, 1,679,000.
That's 110,000 more welfare recipients than students in all of kindergarten through 12th grade.
Now, that's startling by itself right there, but then you have to also look at how much money are we paying for students in any given state. Okay. What's the bang you're getting for your buck there? Look at D.C. schools versus other schools, right? And what resources are they giving each one of those kids? It's not just, oh, we're going to pay teachers and come on in and teach the kids. What are they giving them? Look at the palaces they're building for kids to go to school in. All of this, meanwhile, so the kids can just wear shirts that say, I can't breathe, right? Unbelievable how we have just lost it. We've got 320 million people in America. At latest count, estimates are 320 million people, and we've got an $18 trillion debt and a yearly deficit that is anywhere from a half a trillion to $1.5 trillion. That's where we're at right now. Horrible statistics as we start the new first of the year. But I don't want to end it on a bad note. I don't want to end today's show on a bad note. It's something to take home with you, something to make you feel a little bit better, and that's tiny hamsters.
Yes.
Now, years ago, it was about a year or so ago, when Skip and I were filling in on Pat and Stu, the producers found, and I'm sure Patton's to have played these from time to time, tiny hamsters eating burritos, which is one of my favorite videos
specifically
ever.
Specifically tiny burritos.
Oh, that's right. Tiny
fact,
hamsters.
I believe they're regular-sized hamsters eating tiny burritos.
That's what it is. I'm sorry.
It's hamsters eating
tiny burritos. Thank you for checking me on that, because they are regular-sized hamsters.
It's okay.
And if anybody knows regular-sized...
I don't want anybody disappointed to see the regular-sized hamsters.
Right, that's true. They're not in a microscope. If anybody knows regular-sized versus tiny... It's you.
Wow.
Right. So I'm just glad you told me. I need to know these things.
Moving on. So
that's why you're here. Check these
hamsters
things.
Hamsters eating tiny. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, no, so these are regular-sized hamsters eating tiny Thanksgiving dinner?
I believe so, yes.
Is it the full dinner?
Here's the thing. I have not seen this one.
Neither have I. I saw the tiny burritos.
I'm just really excited to see it.
Okay, I haven't seen it, so I know they're eating Thanksgiving. Okay, where we go? Let's go. Let's watch this. Tiny Thanksgiving.
Oh, yes.
Baste in the turkey with the tiny baster.
Oh, this guy is great. Assemble. Yes. Got to roll out the dough.
It's hard work.
It's good. Smell test.
Smells pretty good.
That's like quite the spread. Taking the dark meat out first.
He carves a tiny turkey well.
Yeah.
What's that thing on the left?
That's a guinea pig, I believe.
Okay, so a little misleading. It is hamsters and guinea pigs. They're dressed up in pilgrims.
Oh. Wow, they are nomming on it, too. Oh.
Are they going to like it?
Excited. Oh, he's going down.
Oh, look at that. Thank you.
Okay,
good.
Yes, they do like it. A little pumpkin pie out there, too. Nice. The cornucopia?
Oh, they've got a cornucopia. A horn of plenty?
Oh, that's the pumpkin pie there. Oh, it's good stuff.
Oh, man, look at that.
Dude, this guy is like a brilliant tiny chef, man.
He really is.
Oh, it's all packed in the mouth.
Oh, okay. I got to be honest with you. The hamster eating the pumpkin pie...
What's that?
I've seen that before, just where it gets shoved in the
cheese. No, that's just you at Thanksgiving.
That's what I'm saying. I've seen that before. That's pretty much how I
eat pumpkin pie there, whatever. Well, that's the whole Thompson household, really.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad they were so happy with their little tiny food there.
I was, too. I was a little concerned, you know, with that much variety in the actual menu that they weren't going to like it all. But from what I could tell, he liked it.
Yeah, they were pretty good. But you're right about being the tiny chef. That's
not
easy.
Dude, seriously. I mean, first of all, the burrito he made, which had, brilliant folding and putting in the ingredients. And it was a well-rolled tiny burrito. This was an entire tiny feast.
Do you know how hard it is to roll out pie crust that's normal size?
It's very,
very difficult.
Yeah.
If you get too wet, the thing just kind of pulls apart. If it's too dry, the thing breaks apart. Mm-hmm. And here he is making tiny pies like that. And by the way, you know, he didn't just make Thanksgiving. He went with the pie. He had the cranberry sauce. He had the stuffing. He had the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a hell of a little tiny turkey carver.
Serious.
I got to give him credit.
Scalpel,
he has taken this to a whole
out that
new
dark
level.
Meat? I mean, when you see tiny turkey, too, you're thinking, oh, I'm probably just going to get, like, one or the other. It's not going to
be
pick your meat.
White and dark meat.
Incredible.
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Pat and Stu today. We'll see you tomorrow morning on the Blaze Radio Network, theblaze.com/radio. If you need more on us, just check out theblaze.com/doc for us on demand.